Welcome to the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast. We are your hosts, Rachel Rambach,
Michelle Erford,
Matt Logan,
and Kimberly Senna Moore.
We are four board-certified music therapists with a mission to empower you to take charge of your personal and professional growth. Join us each month as we talk shop and share stories, tips, and ideas about music therapy. Thanks for stopping by.
So usually in this, you know, as we start our conversations every month when we're recording this podcast, we typically check in about what we're doing, how things are going. This month is a little different, though, because we actually, there is some, I guess, music therapy related news to discuss. And that is the very, in my opinion, sad event of the state of North Dakota and the University of North Dakota deciding to shut down the music therapy program there. Have y'all heard this?
Yes, I have been seeing on Facebook all of my everything going around, lots of newspaper articles. I'm seeing lots of pictures of demonstrations from the music therapy community in that area, just talking about what's going on and the very possible, I believe, very possible shutdown of this music therapy program.
And it seems like plenty of efforts have been made to try to keep this from happening. Even celebrities like Daniel Levitin and Ben Folds have offered their support. So it's really it's just a bummer that even with big names and an entire community asking the university not to do this, it still seems like it's heading that way.
It's so disheartening to think about the students and the faculty at UND that will be affected if this decision goes into effect. And it's really inspiring to see all of these music therapists banding together by sending letters and tweets and trying to reverse this decision. People that have no ties to UND just supporting their colleagues in the music therapy field.
It really has been, and I think we need to give a special shout out to Dr. Megan Maskow, who is the program director at that university, and I sense that she's probably in a difficult position, but I do, just from what I see, what I hear about what she's doing, really trying to make the best out of a difficult situation. She's really serving as a leader for her students and really working to take care of her students. And so a special shout out to Dr. Maskow and also to the students at the UND program. Like you said, Rachel, I too have been absolutely inspired. And I think it's amazing the commitment and the passion and the perseverance they have demonstrated to really advocate for their program and their future profession as well. So I guess all this to say, and if I can speak on behalf of all of us here at the roundtable, we send our support, we send our thoughts to you all at the University of North Dakota and the music therapy program there.
In music therapy land in the United States, spring is the season for regional music therapy conferences. And this year, music therapy students, interns, and professionals are headed to Boise, Idaho, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Macon, Georgia, Austin, Texas, Indianapolis, Indiana, St. Louis, Missouri, and Falmouth, Massachusetts, all to learn, network, and leave feeling recharged and inspired in their work. Many of these students and professionals will also be presenting. So in that spirit, we delve into the idea of presentation preparation. In this episode 76 of the Music Therapy Roundtable podcast, you'll learn our strategies for preparing to deliver a killer presentation. You will hear ideas that we have gathered from presenters we admire, and you will discover ways we try to combat pre-presentation nerves. So I think I'm really excited about this topic because we've all gone to a lot of sessions and we've presented many times ourselves. So I'm looking forward to hearing all of your tips because I think we all know a lot about this. So crew, I want to ask you to think of a presenter that you admire and what are some qualities that stand out as to how they present, and is there anything that person does that you try to emulate? Who would like to go first?
I would love to go first. So my music therapy presenter idol is none other than Dr. Kimberly Senna-Moore.
Nuh-uh.
Yes, this is totally true. For those of you who haven't heard Kimberly present, she has this amazing way of taking a really complex topic and breaking it down so that not only is it relatable, but it really piques your interest. Even if it's something that you know, you might not know that you're interested in, you walk away from her presentations being completely interested in whatever she was talking about. I've seen her present on music therapy in the brain and on research and on advocacy, so many different topics. The first time that I saw her present was in San Diego, and Kimberly, that presentation has stuck with me because of how fluid and fluent and engaging you were.
That I'm kind of blushing here down in Miami. Thank you so much, Rachel. That's really nice. Just give me a little confidence. Yeah, confidence boost before I go to Austin tomorrow and present at the Southwestern Regional Conference. So thank you.
And I'll second what you said. I was also in that very same presentation. I don't know if we knew each other then yet, Rachel. In fact, we probably didn't, but I was in that same one. And it was really good.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, shucks. So how about you, Matt? Who do you admire?
I think my music therapy presentation idol is probably Tim Ringgold. I remember seeing him present when I think in my first year of being a professional or as an intern or something, I don't know. But he was super engaging, and I discovered that we listened to a lot of the same podcasts and speakers. And so I was into what he was saying and how he was presenting it, so much so that in this last regional, we just had our regional meeting in Boise, and he and I are both on the board, but I like his presentation style so much that I asked him to do a joint presentation for the students on how to give a presentation. So I've actually been thinking about this stuff a lot and working with Tim to try to deliver some presentation tips to music therapists so that we can build a big community of outstanding presenters in the field.
So Matt, does that mean that our listeners and we are going to get a little sneak peek at some of these ideas maybe in this podcast?
I might give a little bit of a preview, but who knows? This presentation could end up somewhere else or in a national venue sometimes. So I'm going to save awesome. A few things so that you come to it.
As you should. And okay. No, I completely agree. Tim Ringgold, he's a very dynamic, dynamic presenter. And he also, the thing I've noticed too about presenters and the good presenters is they bring two things. One, they bring a commitment to improving and working on how they present. And then they also present a lot because you need that practice also. And I think Tim does both.
Yes, definitely.
Right?
He does.
Yeah. So the presenter I admire is one of my colleagues here at the University of Miami in the Frost School, and that's Dr. Shannon Delatoile. And without fail, and actually, Rachel, when you were sharing some of the things about me that you so kindly said, Shannon, I feel too, share some similar qualities in that when she presents information, it is done so in such a clear, concise, accessible way. I mean, every time I watch, and usually when I see her present, it's as a teacher. So she is giving a lecture or talking to the students. And it's just that the manner in which she presents material, it's so clean, and she knows it inside and out, and it's very exact, and it's very accessible. And so that's something that I am trying to make sure I continue, I guess, in my own work as a presenter. Yeah. So how about you, Michelle?
Looking at the music therapy area, the presenter that I've seen that I admire has been Diane Austin. And I got to see attend one of her vocal psychotherapy CMTE workshops. Now, it was a workshop, so it was obviously very experiential, and it's vocal psychotherapy, so that's really experiential anyway. But she really did a great job of not only teaching us more about that topic, but also helping me feel comfortable to go do the exercises with her and the whole group, because it's a lot of singing right in front of everyone, a lot of moving, a lot of really putting yourself out there in a way that you might not do very often. And she's very clear to say, I will never ask you to do anything that I won't do in front of you. So it was just a really great environment, very welcoming. And I think no matter what kind of format you're presenting in, to have that presenter be able to create that environment where the attendee is primed for learning and experiencing and really grabbing information that they can walk out with. Like, that's one of the primary goals of a good speaker. And I think Diane Austin definitely did a fantastic job at that.
Nice. I'm going to have to check out some of her. I'm familiar with who she is, but I don't think I've ever heard her present. So I'll have to go check it out.
Check her out, Snats. That's right. Outside the music therapy field, you know, I'm doing more and more with urban design and development and that sort of thing, because I just work for some other people. My husband's in that field. So sometimes I have to tag along to his events. And I really enjoy watching Chuck Marone speak, and he's with Strong Towns, who I do work for. But all of their types of presentations that kind of field does, that, you know, these are architects, engineers, designers, that kind of thing. I enjoy all their presentations, and they make sense to regular people, like not necessarily technical people. But the great thing I like about them is that the slides and the manner in which they present, it's a lot of storytelling and pictures. And then they still deal with facts and figures, but they're able to integrate those, those charts and graphs in their presentation that is not dry, and, you know, having a nicer graphic and that kind of thing. And so those sorts of technical presentations are ones that I'm enjoying to watch as well. And so it's another tip to think of when you're putting your slides together.
And actually, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because the non-music therapy part, because there's another gentleman I'm thinking of that I saw him present, and I saw him present at this Music Perception Conference in Nashville last year, and he is working on a PhD over in Europe somewhere. Sorry, all my European listeners, I don't know where right now. I'm trying to find his name, but speaking of presenting complex information in a clear way, I saw two of his presentations. And with scientific types of presentations, I mean, in music therapy land, our short presentations are, you know, an hour long, maybe 50 minutes. At science types of conventions, they're 20 minutes. And so you may have to condense a large amount of information and, you know, research types of information into clear, concise 20 minutes. And when you go to these presentations, you can see that the presenters, they really need to practice the information. And it also wouldn't surprise me if they scripted it out as well. I just found it. Daniel Bolling, the Department of Cognitive Biology at the University of Vienna. And so he came in, and he's, I don't know, maybe about my age or something like that, but the way he presented, the information, that one was a research, study, and one was really theoretical. It was clean. It was concise. It moved. He told stories. It was engaging. And it was just, he was really quite brilliant, I felt, as a presenter. So I know we were only supposed to share one, but Michelle, you prompted me to remember that other one as well.
Thanks.
Well, so we have all had experience as presenters, either at conference or through workshops we've offered and that sort of thing. So you guys, how do you prepare for a presentation so that it can come off as smoothly and professionally as possible? Rachel, do you want to start?
Sure. So one thing about me is that I am a planner. I am not an off-the-cuff person. Talking spontaneously is just not my thing, and it never has been. So when it comes to presenting, I try to prepare ahead as much as possible. So usually that involves putting together some sort of slide presentation with bullet points, making some notes in addition to that, and then just running through it, both, you know, in my head and then out loud, usually to one of my colleagues or my husband or, you know, in a pinch, my toddler. But the more practice, the better for me, just because I do not like to be on the spot and I'm prepared.
Yeah, and to piggyback on what you just said, Rachel, I think for me, it depends on the type of presentation. If it's something where, say, you know, it's one of the hour-long music therapy, you know, typical music therapy length session, I more just go over it in my head. I don't talk it or practice it out loud because there is time and there's wiggle room to riff as needed or to, you know, look back at notes if needed. But for shorter presentations, like, for example, I need to prepare this 10-minute deal for the Southwestern Conference this week. I actually wrote it out and I scripted it out. And so I am practicing that script and I'm reading it out loud and I'm going through it several times so that, you know, because I'm time limited, I don't want to have to read. I want to have it rehearsed strongly enough that I'm basically reading it and just checking back at my notes as needed. I guess for most presentations, I do a lot of mental rehearsal and some of them I do scripted out.
Do you do the same for like class lectures? Just out of curiosity?
You know, yes and no. So I'm actually shifting. I'm moving towards a flipped classroom model, which means that in terms of the lectures, I'm pre-recording them ahead of time. So now, yes, I'm scripting out my lectures and recording them. Actually, I have to record one later today. But if I do it a more traditional route, then no, it's mostly mental rehearsal.
Got it.
Yeah.
I see.
You thinking about that a little more now, Matt?
Yeah, I'm giving a lecture later today at University of the Pacific. So I'm thinking, I need to go over my slides and make sure I've got all the info. But interesting what Michelle was talking about with how slides are looking different. We don't see as much of just the title and bullet points and you know, reading off the slides. It is a lot more visual and it's more like just visually supporting a story or, you know, whatever information is being shared. And so that was also another thing that Tim brought to our presentation. He had a bullet point that was, or I guess a talking point that was how to make slides that don't suck. And so it's got me thinking about that.
Very appropriately titled, I think.
Yeah. And so what was the question? How do we remain professional or have a professional? I think that was the question. Well, we were speaking with students. We have to, you know, you craft your presentation to your audience and also have an authentic voice. But anyway, how do I prepare for presentations? I do the same sort of things, rehearse in my mind. I don't script it out usually. Because I like to improvise. I like to, in a lot of my presentations, I like to have a conversation with whoever I'm presenting to, if that's possible. So like this afternoon, I'll be talking a lot with the students. I would imagine that's usually how I handle things. But, well, never mind. I'm going to say what I was just about to say for the next question. So I like to have some wiggle room and I like to improvise a bit.
And I think I lean more towards the same techniques that Rachel does. I like to really practice it a lot. And I also like to kind of technically practice. So not just standing in front of the mirror and practice, but also like using my slides or using whichever kind of program that I'm going to be using, like, because I've done some presentations like through Google Talk or something like that. And so I like to practice on the actual, you know, program that we're going to use. If it's like a not a person to person, if it's like a remote presentation kind of thing instead of like a in-person presentation.
Got so to kind of work out the kinks.
Yeah. Because our next question here to ask is, do you all get nervous and how do you handle it? And that is actually, I get very nervous. I get incredibly anxious when it comes to presenting and being in front of people like that. And practicing it and really practicing everything, especially the format and like the programs that we use, really helps me combat those nerves.
Does it make a difference for you if you're presenting, you know, digitally and online versus if you're presenting live in terms of the nervousness piece?
No. Well, maybe a little. Like when it's digitally, I feel like I can hide it a little more. When I'm in front of people, right, they're going to know. They're really going to feel my vibe. I feel like they'll feel that bet more. They'll see my jitters more. When it's digital, especially since they might not actually get to see my face, if I'm using a slide, that might show up instead. So I feel like I'm a little safer. But I wouldn't say that it probably makes me like 2 degrees less anxious. It's not really that big of a difference.
And I would say for me, the biggest factor that determines my level of nerves is the audience to whom I'm presenting. So if I'm talking to music therapists or my local music teachers federation, I usually get super nervous, at least at first. I usually kind of calm down as I get into the presentation, but the nerve factor is definitely high to begin with. Whereas if I'm talking to parents or students, I don't feel anywhere near as nervous.
Yeah, it is a little more. I mean, do you remember back in the day when you would say have to play or role play in front of your peers? Or when you had to perform, you know, give a recital or something? I always found it harder to do that in front of peers. And Rachel, I agree with you. I am like you. Not that I agree with you. It's your thought. But I am like you in that it depends on the presentation. I remember, I think the last time I was really, really nervous. Generally, I get really nervous when it's a newer audience. So in recent history, the last times I've gotten really nervous was when I gave an oral presentation at a music perception conference and when I testified at the U.S. Capitol. And actually this, I'm a little nervous for this. I mentioned earlier, I'm doing this like 10-minute blur, but the Southwestern Conference, I'm a little nervous for that too. So it's the new stuff makes me nervous, especially when there's a time limit and I can't, you know, riff and take my time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too, to have nerves pop mm-hmm. up at those times too. I think the important thing when it comes to dealing with nerves, because I have like chronic anxiety problems that I've had all my life. And what I've learned is that what really helps is just to know that you're nervous and just tell yourself, I'm nervous and here's what I'm going to do. And you make a plan and you just act on it. And that is really the best thing you can do to deal with. It's not fun, but it's what you can do. And the more you do it, right, as much not fun that is, but really the more ways you can get out there and practice or do it for real, the easier things get. Now, what about you, Matt? Do you get nervous or anything like that with presenting?
No, not at all. It's just...
Well, you're a lifelong performer.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I do get nervous. But I have some strategies that kind of help me. First of all, like Rachel said, I like to break the ice, usually by way of a joke or something. I usually don't say that I'm nervous, but I'll if I can get the room to loosen up a little bit, a room to laugh. I mean, they want to see a presentation go well too. You know, they don't want anybody to go up and fail. And I try to keep that in mind. And then I try to organically, you know, I don't get up there and tell one of my hokey dad jokes, but try to just get the room to loosen up a little bit. I also try to keep my focus on what I can do for the audience, not how they are judging or perceiving me. I try to remember that the presentation isn't about me. It's about delivering something to them. And I just tell myself, you know, whether they like it or not, as long as I go out there and try to deliver something of value, I think that sentiment is going to come across, and the audience will understand that. And B, I will have done my best. I can be happy with it. I also find that.
Yeah, I think I was going to jump in, Matt. I think that's a good point, at least to most of the audience that we're talking to. They're there to learn from us, and they really are supportive. I have a feeling that in other professions, it's not quite the same, but that's, I have a very similar experience with our profession and the presentations I've given. They're not there to critique. They're not there to be critical. They do want to learn and want to see you do well.
Yeah. Well, and oftentimes the ones who are there to be critical are not presenting, and they're not, I don't know. I kind of just write that off. And if you want to judge or be critical, fine. But especially if they're not presenting or doing anything to a challenging like that, then I don't mm-hmm. take that feedback with too much seriousness. I also would say that by not scripting things too heavily, I have less opportunities to screw up. Like if I don't say something that I meant to, you know, if it is scripted. Let me see if I can say this in a way that makes sense. Remember, I just woke up like an hour ago. if it's scripted, if it's scripted, and then I know in my head I messed something up, then that might throw me off for the rest of the presentation, or I'm going to be thinking about how I said this differently or didn't say something that I meant to say. But if it's a little bit more loose, I can have my bullet points, and if I miss something, I'm okay with it because I know I'm still delivering something valuable. So just for me personally, it's a little bit easier to not have my words planned out, you know, word for word.
I think it's fascinating how we all have different approaches and different styles and different preferred methods.
So why don't we wrap up with each of us saying our one piece of advice that we would offer to the listeners that can help them with their presentation skills.
My tip is a super basic one, but it's something that I have to remind myself of every time I get up to present, and that is just to be myself, not try to be overly scholarly or overly formal, because that's just not my personality. It's not my presentation style. And if it was, I might not be the one presenting at that particular event or conference or what have you.
Well, to piggyback on what you just said, and that was, I think, Matt, you called it the authentic voice. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in total agreement there. I think, too, is expose yourself. Expose yourself both in terms of giving present. If this is something you really do want to improve and you do want to do and make it a part of your repertoire as a professional, expose yourself both to opportunities to present, but also to other presenters, and in particular, those presenters you admire. So when you go and listen to somebody speak, don't just listen to the content. If this is something you want to improve, listen to the strategies they put in place. You know, how are they presenting? What are they doing? What are they doing with their body language and their facial affect and how they structure the talk, how they make it engaging? And see if you can learn from them and incorporate some of what you observe them do into your own style. So that would be that's my suggestion.
Good one.
Yeah. You both took mine, so I don't know what to say now.
Ditto.
Jump in first. I was kidding.
I should have jumped in there first. So be authentic. Emulate without copying. Is kind of what you were saying, Kimberly, in a way.
Yeah, it was, but you said it so much more simply. Emulate without copying.
I guess what I would add is just before you present, just to kind of calm your nerves. This may or may not work, but give it a try. How's that for a disclaimer? just calm yourself, take a minute and ask, whatever higher power or, the music therapy gods, that's who I've been talking to lately. The music therapy gods to help me deliver a great presentation that people will learn from. And whether or not you believe in whatever higher power, like the music therapy gods, I don't remember that from Greek history, but, just to kind of take that pressure off of you, put it somewhere else, and then teach.
Teach. I like that.
It's kind of like, keeping the purpose of what you're doing in mind. The purpose isn't to showcase or put, limelight on you. The purpose is to share and share information and to help others.
Right.
To teach.
Exactly.
Nice.
And I would add that when it comes to you and your presentation and your prep for it, just do what you know that you need to do so that you can be successful. If that means putting a lot of words on your slides, put words on your slides. If that means, maybe going against some of the tips that we said, do it anyway. Because what really the first thing that is important, along with the information, is the presenter. And if you're not comfortable, you're not comfortable. So you just do what you need to do. And then next time around, you decide if you want to do it that way again or morph it a little bit and adapt. So just do what you need to do, and it's going to be beautiful, and everyone's going to love it. All right, and we have an announcement for you. This is actually coming from the World Federation of Music Therapy. They have some questions for you, so here they are. Did you ever ask yourself what the profile of a music therapist looks like worldwide, and how music therapists provide services around the world, and which global trends can be seen? Well, the World Federation of Music Therapy is going to be contacting music therapists around the world with some surveys. They want to find out how you spend your time, where you work, and different clinical practices from your country. And so the idea is just to, and this is a worldwide project, so the idea is just really try to get that that snapshot of what music therapists around the world are doing, how they spend their time, and that sort of thing. So keep a lookout online. In the next couple of weeks, they're going to have a survey that they're sending out. So please fill it out, because I'm really interested in seeing the results. I want to know what music therapy looks like in our world.
I heard about this recently, and I think it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
Really interested to see what comes of it.
Yeah, they have done this in the past, like years ago, trying to do this survey, but it was just difficult to do, because even though we know there aren't a lot of music therapists, there really are a lot of people to send the survey to, and it's just difficult to get participation. And I get it. We're all over the place. Some people, we all connect to the world in different ways and that sort of thing, but they're trying again. And I just really want to help get the word out, because it would just be, what incredible information to get. I mean, I don't really know what the questions are going to be. I wonder if they're going to ask salary ranges, which I hope they do. But I think that would be really interesting, just to see, the locations of people on a worldwide scope, how many clients they see, and all of that stuff. I don't know what the questions are going to be, but I think it's going to be really neat. Really, really, really cool. I'm a geek.
Yeah, and I do have to say kudos to that team organizing this, because this is now the third mention that I have heard of this survey. So they're building it up, which is, yeah, you know, good. Yay. Good job. Yay.
Okay, so our cool resource of the month is an app that I've been using, for a little while. I used it, and then I stopped, and that was silly, and then I started again, because it really is useful. It's called Way of Life, and what it is a habit tracking app. So basically, you can key in habits that you want to have daily, or, you know, however many times a week, and then it prompts you at the end of each day to go through and mark whether or not you've done it. And then you can put it all into a pie chart, into a bar graph. You can kind of see your progress. And so maybe the habit is eating less fast food, or in fact, I've got some daily habits on mine. I'll tell you what I'm working on, and you can see how this might be a beneficial app. So I've got practice guitar, read, write, sweat, meditate, call a friend, share something with my music therapy source community. Really simple, just 7 things. And then at 8 p.m. every day, it asks me, hey, Matt, did you do these things? And I mark. And it's really fun to kind of build up momentum. And I see as the week goes on, oh, wow, I'm doing really well. I'm going to keep this going. And it's super motivating and helpful for building those habits that will keep you on track for your goals.
Nice. So I actually think you've been sharing some of these, I think on your Instagram feed or something like that. That's like right. Hashtag daily goals or something. Is that from this?
I'm calling them dailies. And that's from dailies. A book called The War of Art. Not The Art of War. The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. It's another great.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah, it's a great book, isn't it?
Oh, I've never. Ooh, I might have to add that to my list.
It's really cool, and it's really easy too, because it's all short little, I mean, not even chapters. It's like a page to 2 pages for each idea. It's nice to just keep handy.
Nice. Winning the inner creative battle. I just found it.
There it is.
Cool. We'd like to give a shout out to our Pro Perk partners. Music Therapy Pro members receive discounts on products and services from Metro Music Therapy's paper, Music Therapy eBooks, Music Therapy Mailings, Wholesome Harmonies Music Therapy, A Perfect Lullaby, The Music Therapy Research Blog, Listen and Learn, Music Therapy Maven, Bear Paw Creek, and Session Cafe. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you for joining us. To see the show notes, go to www.musictherapyroundtable.com. If you liked this podcast, take your skills to the next level by visiting Music Therapy Pro. Although currently under construction, very soon you can have unlimited access to almost a dozen CMTEs. Check it out at www.musictherapypro.com. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Music Therapy Roundtable podcast.